Welcome to our little retreat. To open our retreat, I'll ring the bells. That's the only ritual we are going to have. And the bells mean be awake, be present, be here, now, alert, attentive to this moment, embracing this moment, what is, become friendly with it. That's the only lesson this weekend and the rest of your life. So that's the only reason why we're here, why I am here, why you are here, is to be in that shared energy field that sometimes I call presence. You could have other names for it, a state of consciousness that is relatively new to the planet. But it's coming in fast. And that's why you're here, because a new state of consciousness, so to speak, wants to arise, is arising on the planet. On the surface, there are all kinds of personal reasons. It looks you've come here for this or that reason in your personal life. But if you look more deeply, the reason is that something is emerging from within you. Something that is greater, deeper than the identity that you had lived with, lived in until recently, the story of me and myself, that limited sense of identity confined to the little person that I am. Every person is a little person. Dominated by desire and fear, both connected to an obsessive and desperate need for the future. I need to get somewhere to be complete, to be myself. So it's good to remind ourselves we are not here to learn new things. We may learn a few new things accidentally. Facts add content to your mind. It may happen accidentally, but that's not the purpose. It's not an adding to why we are here. Not an addition. What's the opposite of addition? Subtraction. That's more like it. What that means is you realize that you cannot find yourself in the content of your mind, and you realize that you cannot find yourself in the past, no matter how many sessions of psychoanalysis you have. You will never quite get there and find yourself. You can find many things about yourself, facts and different forms of conditioning, but it won't be the essence of who you are, even after 20 years of psychoanalysis. There's nothing wrong with psychoanalysis. If there are psychoanalysts here, I'm not threatening your identity. So finding yourself in the past doesn't work. Finding yourself in the future, you've tried that also, thinking just this little bit more future and then I'll be complete, or finally I can relax. And you thought that moment had come a few times, so getting a good job, or a wonderful relationship, or winning the lottery. And then that wasn't quite it. And often it turned into its opposite again. You found the person that made you happy. 5 years later, the same person makes you unhappy. So the world of content of your mind, thought, activity, mental noise, whatever goes through your head, whatever it is that you are telling yourself, and about your life, and about somebody else, other people, your life situation, is mental content. And whatever ways you react to situations, people, events, what happens is content of your mind, is conditioning, and is not who you ultimately are. And the fact that you are here in this magical place, surrounded by nature in such abundance and aliveness and profusion, it's a miracle, it's magic just to walk through here. And yet even here, you haven't left your mind behind at home. The mind tends to travel with you, even to the most beautiful place. You carry the mind with you, and that's fine. Nobody is expecting that you should have left your mind at home. And if you are expecting this from yourself, that is more mind stuff that tells yourself you should be peaceful because you're on a retreat. You shouldn't be tense. You've been tense all week, but this isn't the place to be tense. Why are you tense? Why can't you even be relaxed here? Self-talk, dialogue with yourself, mind stuff, mental noise. So that travels with you, and then there's the other mental noise about other people. And that's the mind. It is not a personal problem of yours, the fact that your mind travels with you. It's the personalizing of it that makes it into a heavy problem, the fact that there is mental noise. If you make a personal problem out of it, and the mental noise loves to be a personal problem because it perpetuates itself if you believe in it as a problem, as me and my problem. And it keeps telling you that there are problems that you need to address and you need to solve and think about now. It's urgent. And what then happens, that you are in the midst of this magic, and peripherally you are aware of the flowers that are so alive, shouting with joy and worshipping God, the one life. And you perceive that only peripherally, and so perhaps the mind goes, oh, isn't that pretty, whatever. And then it goes on to the next thing, and the next thing is, I need to work something out in my head. Oh, look at that nice sunset there. So you have on the periphery all that magic, and then in the center you have waves and waves of mental noise. And each wave says, give attention to me, I am important, I matter. And so it draws, it has a magnetic pull, that is the mind, it draws your attention in. And then when you're in a mind stream, a thought stream with your attention, then your identity is in it, then you are that thought. And that thought is problematic, because almost all thought is problematic. And if it is not problematic now, if you think a little bit more, it becomes problematic. You can think about the beauty of nature for 5 minutes, and even that will become problematic in some way. If only the mind will ask, why is all this, these flowers, why are they here? What do they want? Why? What's the purpose of it all? There's in the early 60s, this place already existed. There was Fritz Perls, the founder of Gestalt Therapy, who used to give workshops here. And if I remember correctly, in Gestalt Therapy they have an expression that is, why is a dirty word. If you ask why, that means you want to, the mind wants to take over again, get trapped back in mind stuff. Explanations. Give me an explanation. And no explanation is ever enough. What's the next explanation? If that's the case, then why? And it works on a certain level. There's nothing wrong with that. The human mind works things out here and there. But looking for yourself in it, having it take over your life, your relationships, every moment of your life, when you walk through nature, when you are with your lover, your partner, loved ones, family, close relationships, to have that noise stream run your life, that is agony. But that's the human condition, as it has been for many thousands of years. To be identified with thought, thought just happens to you. And thought becomes a me. It becomes a personal, an image in the head, a me. And I am so important. My problems are so important. How unimportant they are, you can see when you look at old photographs in antique shops. You know those, they sell them, because nobody remembers who they are, but they've become early photos, black and white, with people in all kinds of situations or positions, at weddings, at christenings, at, in the street scenes, people all looking very serious. In most old photos they look serious. It wasn't the custom to smile when they took photos, so in old photos everybody looks. And they're all immersed in the seriousness of their world of problems, their personal circumstances, and it matters so much. And what is left now that the soap bubble has burst? There's just an image, a form, an imprint, and that's fading fast. If they're lucky, you can turn it over and in the back it still mentions who they are, the names. But not many people, maybe nobody is left who knows who they are. Or maybe there's somebody who knows, yes, my great-grandfather, that was his name. The personal world of problems, it's not facing situations, not facing challenges, that is, of course, part of living here in the world of form is to face challenges. Life does that. We are not denying the fact that challenges come to you in this existence continuously, and many of you, even between arriving here and coming to this hall, have already faced challenges. That's life. That's what life does. And there's nothing, we are not denying that this happens, that there are no challenges. There are little things that go wrong continuously, and there's nothing wrong with that, so they don't really go wrong. The mind says this shouldn't be happening. So you can watch that. If it is true, it is something that you can face now. It's a challenge that is to be faced at this moment. And that may happen here, even on a retreat. The internal challenge is not to be drawn into the noisy mind. the external challenges are perhaps you may be sharing a room with another noisy mind. And so you have to listen to that, not only your own mind, you have to listen to somebody else's mind. Then that becomes a challenge. And that is not a problem. It's a challenge, and you face it by accepting it the way it is. It is as it is, and then action may happen. You may say, would you mind not talking all the time? Would be nice to have some period, don't you think? Would be nice to have a little bit of quiet. Or you can surrender simply to the fact, you can use it as a teaching, and you just allow this human mind to go on and on. And you are there in a state of allowing it, say, isn't that amazing? That's the human mind. Nothing personal about it. That's the human mind. And then you just actually, you allow it to be as it is. Well, and it goes on and on. One thing after another. And then that person leaves the room, and then you suddenly notice that the same thing is happening inside your head also. And then you say, oh, there's the human mind also. It's not made into a problem, it's faced. Action may arise when you say, this is how it is. I booked a deluxe room and they're putting me in a tent. No, it's not me, but I arrived yesterday and my room wasn't, somebody else had moved into my room, so they didn't have a room for me. That's how it is, no room. Life does that. It happens continuously. That's okay. Now the little reactive me, the mind-made self, would use that situation to strengthen itself through reactivity and through making wrong. You should have, why didn't you? Or whatever it says. Or they should have, it might say it aloud or it may do it in the head. And in that, you can sense a contraction happening. And then it's a problem. That's how suddenly the challenge, in which there's nothing wrong, turns into a problem. And so that moment is to watch, especially while you're here, the little challenges. There may not be a big challenge here. Little challenges. The basic principle is the same, whether big or small. Your job here, your opportunity here, to use that space of aware presence in which we meet here, so that will still be operating in you, it will be helpful to be present with what happens, and then to watch to see whether a challenge is turning into a problem. When reactivity comes in, mental noise increases, and you're complaining about what is mentally. And in that, the me, the sense of self, becomes stronger. And again, if it's completely unconscious, you have no idea that that's what's happening. So there's the reactivity, and through the reactivity, a challenge becomes a problem. And it can remain a problem long time after it's no longer there. The challenge has long since disappeared. They've put me in another room and I'm fine. There's a bed, there's that, but the mind could use that to go on for a few more hours about that situation. You have a problem. Or it may be something that the mind says could happen at some point, and then it dwells on it. It's not even a challenge, it's an imaginary projection. It could happen, and then mental noise revolves around it, And the little me gets stronger with its problems. My life is so important because I've got so many problems. That's not conscious. If you make it conscious, it's amusing. But unfortunately, it's unconscious. So many patterns will actually become amusing to you, because when you see how the human mind operates in its dysfunctional mode, then you begin to smile. It's, oh, it's the human mind. That's all. So here, you are here, you've come here with your mind. That's a fact. And it may be that there may be intervals here when the mind subsides. Perhaps as you sit here, you can simply be in the state of openness, allowing this moment to be. Sense a connectedness with your inner body, the aliveness that is in every cell as you sit here. Your attention is on the words and the surroundings, and part of your attention is in the inner energy field of your body. Oh, and so you get glimpses, or more than glimpses, of what is possible, a state of consciousness that is free of mental noise, a state of alert presence and openness, very awake, in which the compulsion to weave a mental noise around sense perceptions, around what's happening, that compulsion is suddenly no longer there, and you can know, perceive, and know very deeply beyond mind. You know beyond mental noise. This can happen as you sit here. It can happen as you walk in nature, the greatest teacher, surrounded by this incredible beauty and aliveness. And for the first time in a while, you truly look at a flower. And there's a gap of no thought in that looking. There's a space, a sudden arising of inner spaciousness. This could happen as you sit here right now, or out in nature, because there's no mind in no noisy mind in nature. Nature is lives in that stillness. And suddenly there's a spaciousness around your sense perceptions. So the sense perceptions are there, the incredible beauty of those forms, and yet that's not all. There's suddenly a sense of space around what you're perceiving, because you're no longer perceiving through mental noise, trying to work it out or interpret. Not that you cannot use the mind anymore. When it's needed, it'll be there. More powerfully than before, because you haven't exhausted yourself with useless thinking for hours. And when finally thinking is needed, occasionally, it works quite well. You apply it. Right. Possibility one, possibility two, three, four, five. Okay. And then again you go back into stillness. Right, that's true. So you become familiar with that inner, what I call sometimes spaciousness or stillness. That is the new state of consciousness that arises. And that is the awakening of human intelligence. Not the ability to get better at IQ tests. And I don't want to offend anybody who is a member of Mensa here or whatever and has built an identity around it. That's fine. That means you're good at solving IQ tests. So there is a certain intelligence that is good at solving those things. And that's useful for many things. Not for knowing who you are. Not for living in love, joy and aliveness. Not for being creative either. For creativity. That's not really what it is. So there is a far greater intelligence that can arise in humans. Far greater than the little mind. The little mind is not separate from that vast intelligence, but a tiny aspect of that. Now just imagine being trapped in a tiny aspect of vastness and thinking, that's me. So to know that what arises, that state of consciousness, is this vast intelligence there, but very different from what the human mind calls intelligence. When you become still and present and alert, and then suddenly a mind wave comes back. It rolls in. And at that, if somebody could watch you at that moment, you would see that from being present here, there's a certain luminosity about someone who is present. There's an emanation of aliveness, someone who is present. And if somebody could watch you going through the transition from being present to being completely absorbed in thought, and some sensitive people can actually see it, you can see, you don't even need a lot of sensitivity to see it, just watch how suddenly the luminosity becomes dulled, like a veil descending, and a sudden absence of, where before there was a conscious presence and aliveness, suddenly there's an absence. And you know that person is not here anymore. And they may be talking about something very important, but they're not here. And this is it's a big problem. We need to... It matters. And you get taken over by... This is the mind wave. You are it. You are the mind. And then you have the corresponding emotions that reflect that contraction in the physical realm of cells and organs becoming tight and contracted. Gone. Gone. And then the mind wave subsides. And sometimes it doesn't subside for quite a while. If this should happen to you, whenever the mind wave comes, it's not long before you are in some form of suffering. One could say that to be identified with a mind stream is already suffering. But that then leads into some more intense form of suffering. You'll become unhappy. Anger, sadness, depression arise. And that's at the latest then you will know that you have lost the now. Oh, I lost the now. I'm unhappy. I must have lost the now. And then the amazing thing is you can now, once you know that you've lost the now, there's already some presence, because otherwise you wouldn't even know that you've lost the now. When you're completely identified with the mind stream, you don't know it. You are the mind stream. But the moment you know, oh, I lost it, then you can step back into now. And that goes like, oh. An alertness suddenly returns. Oh, and the first thing that may happen is you can sense your inner body again. You can sense that you're alive inside. Oh. And you can suddenly see the incredible aliveness around you, especially here. But even in downtown Detroit, you could see great aliveness around you. If only the sky. I have nothing against certain cities, just most cities are made by the human mind. mind-made. Everything you look at is mind-made, reflecting the human mind. So here, for you, is to be watchful to see how you drift back into mind and see how quickly you can come out of it, how quickly you can... And all that's required is for you to know that you've been drawn back into mind. Just to know, oh, I'm back in mental noise. So that means you're not completely back in mental noise. And then you say, okay, there's the mental noise. That's right. That's how it is. You can't fight the mind. Again, the same principle applies here that is applies when you go out into nature and there is a spaciousness as you perceive the flower, the tree, the incredible profusion of life around here, forms of life. But also with regard to emotions that arise, that reflect what the mind does, or mental noise that arises, you can also bring that spaciousness to it and say, there's a mental noise. I'm full of mental noise. That's how it is. In other words, whatever is, you say yes to. And that is your practice, particularly here, an ideal field for practicing that yes. That is the quickest way to the new state of consciousness, because it is the yes that opens the portal to the new state of consciousness. The non-resistant state of consciousness. Non-resistant to what? Non-resistant to the isness of this moment. I say yes to this moment. What about you? I say yes to what is internally. Not necessarily externally. Externally, you might say, no, I want honey, not sugar. You said no. That's not an... There's an, or you can say, no, I'm not... A drunk driver stops, wants to give you a ride. You say, no. Thank you. Non-reactive. Non-resistant. A simple, clear no. And that's a no under which there's still a big yes to what is. You're not making this person wrong because he's offering you a ride or doing something. That's how it is. So whatever, here, bring that in as the quickest way beyond mental noise, the state of yes and acceptance of the moment, of the now. Because ultimately the compulsion to think is rooted in the non-acceptance of life. And where's life? Here, now. It cannot be anywhere else. It's always now. The whole egoic entity, the mind-made self, compulsively denies what is, because it sustains itself through living in time, past and future, not now. It needs the now because the story of me needs the future to complete itself. The story of my identity, it never does complete itself, of course, but it thinks it can. So our practice is simply being with the now, alert to now, open. And it's so much easier here. It's easier because we meet here and presence arises. You don't even have to do anything. That's the nice thing. You can just sit here. And presence arises. by itself. And then you go out, and then it's relatively easy because of the magic of this place, of the beauty that surrounds you everywhere. Open to that every moment. Of course, it's easier to want to get away from now if you're stuck in the middle of a freeway in L.A. But if you've practiced here, the openness to what is, eventually you can be in the same state of openness anywhere. You don't even need the beauty of nature, because all nature is in you ultimately. So becoming free of the burden of an exclusively personalized sense of self, a heavy me, which is sustained through continuous mental noise. That's why we are here. But that's not a task that, okay, that's, how do we get to that? How do we do that? It's happening already. You can just relax and let it happen. And let the help that is here help you. Being here is helpful. Nature is helpful. And even your noisy roommate, if you have one, is helpful. Because you can practice surrender. Yes. Allow the noise to be there. Or allow it to be there for 10 minutes, and then words may come out of your mouth. You might say, oh, could we be quiet for a while? Or they may not even come out of your mouth. It may be enough. You may be in a state of complete peace with the noise going on around you. So in that new state of consciousness, you're not exclusively drawn into reacting to and identified with things that arise in your life, whether they be thoughts or external things. Those things, of course, arise. But there is suddenly a depth to your life that wasn't there before when you were trapped in mental noise. And that depth is the unconditioned consciousness, a spaciousness around your life. Whereas before, there was this little thing and that little thing, oh, and that, and always reacting to the next thing and thinking about that. No sense of space or spaciousness. And suddenly, things are still there, thoughts are still there, but there's a space around those things. Now, this is something one cannot really talk about very well, because it goes beyond what language is meant to express. I talked to Ram Dass a few weeks ago, and he said, we are talking about something that one cannot talk about, and yet we're talking about it. So these words are just little pointers. Spaciousness. Stillness. A space around things. A sense of beingness. Beingness. In which things happen. In which the noisy roommate happens. In which the beautiful flower happens. In which the loss of my $5 million that I invested in the stock market, I didn't, but happens. In which good and bad happens. In which pleasure and pain happens. Because all those things are to do with this world of form, of phenomenal existence. You cannot be without those things. It comes and goes. Everything comes and goes. Gain and loss, pleasure and pain. You can't go beyond that here in physical existence, but you can be rooted in a much deeper place in which those things actually become quite enjoyable. Whereas before they weren't really enjoyable. You were desperately thought you needed this or you needed that, or you didn't want to have that, and you'd wanted to be free of that desperately. Everything mattered. And yet the world was not an enjoyable place. It was an obstacle, a minefield to cross. Oh, what's the next thing that's going to hit me? And invariably the next thing comes. You just have solved something here and sorted that out, and suddenly something else pops up from behind and you have a new problem. Oh, my God, not... Why is it always me? Why is it... These things always happen to me. Life must have something against me. Yes, it has something against you, because you have something against it. You deny the now continuously. This means you're hostile to life. You're an antibiotic. And antibiotic means anti-life. And life simply reflects that. Life doesn't have anything against you, the totality, the whole. But for many humans on this planet, their personal existence is one, to use the words of Churchill, which I often quote, he was referring to human history, but it also refers to personal existence. Most people experience life as one damn thing after another. No. And you can just, why doesn't life leave me alone? It won't. It's not in the nature of things. Life won't. It's not meant to leave you alone. It's not meant to make you happy either. The world of phenomenal existence isn't meant to make you happy. Well, if you still think so, you can try to get some happiness out of it. And for a while you can, of course. You get happiness out of it, and then it turns around and suddenly you get unhappiness out of it. It's not meant to make you happy. Even relationships, not meant to make you happy. Although often you read the ads in single columns, looking for someone to make me happy. The world can't do that. It can't make you happy. And so the wonderful thing happens. You give up the demand that something or someone or some situation or some person or some condition or some achievement should make you happy. And connected with that demand that something should make you happy is a profusion of mental noise that goes all around that. How do I get there? How? When is it going to come? The world can't do that. It can't make you happy. And so the wonderful thing happens. You give up the demand that something or someone or some situation or some person or some condition or some achievement should make you happy. And connected with that demand that something should make you happy is a profusion of mental noise that goes all around that. How do I get there? How? When is it going to come? And even this place, if you've come here in the expectation that it should make you happy, you will find many things that, oh no, that shouldn't be happening. The sun should be shining, it is not shining, and this isn't right, and that wasn't right. My room isn't the way I imagined it to be, and that, you could have a, it is normal. And when you suddenly see all this, it's all connected with a little me making demands upon the world to grow bigger, to sustain itself. And so how liberating not to demand, and the demand drops, that something or someone should make you happy. And that when suddenly comes the acceptance of the suchness of this moment. And what you had been looking for in your non-acceptance of the suchness of this moment is suddenly there. Not, I wouldn't call it happy, it's actually deeper than happy. Because happy means something good has just happened and makes me feel great. And of course it never lasts. But there's something deeper than happy, an abiding sense of joy, aliveness and peace, no matter what happens on the surface of things. That's deeper than happiness. In some teachings they call it happiness. Ramana Maharshi said, happiness is your true nature. He's right, he just uses the word in a slightly different sense. It is that's there. So how quickly, how easily that happens, the demands that the world should make you happy are dropped, and you can then, you accept the suchness of this moment. And suddenly, there is peace. No matter what happens in this moment, it's okay. So it's not that it makes you happy, but what you'd been looking for through non-acceptance is already here. That is the miracle. It's already here. And it looks like a conspiracy, although I'm not into conspiracies, but that almost nobody talks about that. The one thing that matters in the world and in human existence and at school, what do children learn? All kinds of things, but not what really matters. The one thing that matters, hardly anybody knows, nobody talks about it. The liberated life, how to live free of problems, suffering ultimately, free of suffering. No, never heard of it. And they've got degrees, PhDs. No, never heard of it. So that's, it is the great soul. This is the arising of freedom. Liberation, freedom, and you can see perhaps now what that word means, which before was an abstract concept in the head. Perhaps you've been reading books, spiritual books or ancient teachings and talk about this and that. It is so immediate, so present. This is the now. It won't get any better than this. It doesn't have to. What else do you want? That beautiful sound all around. And yet, that perception of the sound happens, there's an underlying sense of stillness in which it happens. And so, with that comes the amazing realization that the now is actually a sacred space. But you don't know that until you enter it. There is no other sacredness except the one that's in the now. And every time, the field of now, when your attention moves into it, becomes aligned with that, and you realize there is an underlying sacredness to this whole world, this whole phenomenal existence, and to myself. And on the surface of that, there are little waves and ripples that are my personalized existence, and that's fine too. Nothing wrong with that. So let's, for in this beautiful now, this beautiful space of now, this sacred space of now, let's acknowledge that sacredness that is both within and without, and that does not require belief systems, because that's the human mind again. Feel the connectedness with your inner body, particularly not only now, as when you go to bed tonight, feel the inner body, be in the body with your attention, sense the aliveness. Go to sleep from there. When you wake up, sense the aliveness. Not just a few seconds, just be with it for a while.